A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Inventing Anna, the official podcast, is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. Welcome to Inventing Anna, the official podcast, your exclusive look inside the making of the Shondaland series on Netflix. I'm your host, Stacey Wilson Hunt, and today I'm going to dig into some scenes with Emmy-nominated actor Anna Chlumsky, who plays journalist Vivian Kent. In our chat, Anna reveals her lifelong ambition to play a journalist, and her approach to bringing Vivian to life on screen. We also discuss some of our favorite milestone Vivian moments and how she and co-star Julia Garner approach their final scene together. Welcome, Anna Chlumsky. It's so nice to have you on our show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. And it's hard for me to not think of you every time I hear the name Inventing Anna, because that is also your name.
Also my name. Also Anna Deavere Smith's name.
Yes.
Yeah, there were a lot of Annas.
I wondered about that on set, if there was some confusion.
Oh, yeah. All the time. And then, yeah, and we would always say, just call us by our characters.
Well, you figured it out, which is all that matters.
Yeah.
So before we talk about Inventing Anna, I was very intrigued and heartened to hear about something you said recently, which is you had always dreamed about playing a journalist. And as a journalist, I'm so happy that someone would dream about playing a character like me in a show. You've also said that you have been scared to ask people questions in your life as Anna, as an actor. And I'm curious, walk me through not only what has intrigued you about journalism, but what is it about that job that scares you?
I mean, we could do, you know, several long therapy sessions on why I, you know, like why I have basically like a big old sensor on my own questioning. I think honestly, to be succinct about it, I'm sort of a large talker. I don't do small talk. I do large talk. And I, you know, over the last 41 years, I've discovered that sometimes people aren't into that. Sometimes people really don't want to skip to like their mom and their like issues in their household. They want to just talk about the weather.
Right. So you're saying you prefer to get into existential angst and not small talk, essentially.
Usually. Yes. Yeah. Almost as a rule. I don't want to hurt people with my curiosity.
There's so much of that superficial banter that is kind of part of the job at parties and gatherings. And I have felt that too, where you just think, can we just get to the good stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the reasons I live in New York.
smart.
Not to make generalizations, but let's generalize. Yeah. And, but then also, yeah. So like, I think I really started to get into the idea of like, wow, what is it like to just have unbridled channel from your own curiosity to the person that you're with? Like, Frank Rich is a great journalist.
Of course. You worked with him on Veep. Yep.
Yes. And so he was a producer on Veep. And, you know, we would like go out with him and his wife, Alex Witchell. And they would just, they just had it all right there. They just like, oh, everything. They were so curious about everything around them. And they were so excited to know more. And they would ask. They would just ask. And I thought, oh, wow. That's just amazing and delicious. And I am so interested in that.
I love that. You made me think of something, which is journalists get to be curious for a living.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And I think actors are like that too. At least a lot of the ones I speak to get to be curious and inhabit new stories. And I think that there is a lot of crossover there.
It's true. We have to. We're always looking for the deeper, you know, the more. We're always digging.
Absolutely. And in terms of this story, obviously journalism is at the center of it, Jessica Pressler's incredible story on Anna Delvey. Unlike a lot of people we've spoken to over this podcast, you have said that you actually didn't know that much about the Anna Delvey saga. And I would love to know how that informed your conversations with Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers when you sat down to talk about Vivian. And what were the questions you were asking in those first meetings?
Oh, I had actually just listened to Rebecca Jarvis's podcast on Elizabeth Holmes. And so
this is the Dropout about the Theranos founder scam, right?
Yes. So it was really already kind of at the tip of my brain, the young sort of exemplifying of a young woman who is, you know, sort of doing better at this fakery game than even the fakers who made it. That's sort of what was on my brain.
Well, and there's so much that comes up in Elizabeth Holmes' story, the idea of how an attractive young woman, a blonde woman, how she can navigate this world in a way that is different from an older person or maybe a person of color. She inhabits a very unique space.
And how mad they were about like her changing her voice. And yeah, it's weird. You're right. Like inauthenticity is always weird. It's always weird. I love truth. I love telling the truth. I'm the same. However, are you that mad at all those like, you know, nerdy guys who then start dressing like they're hip hop stars and like they're all completely false as well?
Well, and let's also go back to the tech pioneers. I mean, a lot of these guys exerted a lot of abusive behavior on their employees and colleagues.
Totally.
That was forgiven because of their genius. So we see this over and over again as men not having to apologize for those behaviors, but women.
No, the young women are only allowed to be genius as long as the older men can own them. That's it.
That is very true.
So that is what we were talking about.
I love that. And when you were talking to Shonda and Betsy about this, obviously they have so many insights and wonderful directions of how to guide actors, but they also want you to claim this as your own. Vivian Kent is not a real person.
Right.
She's obviously an amalgam, largely based on Jessica, but also composite aspects to her too.
Yes.
What did they empower you to do in terms of owning this character and creating something new for the screen?
That was very much some of the beginning conversations, because we just had to decide where. We had wonderful research department. They were able to provide us with anything we needed. And so the first decision was, what's my directive? Like, what path do I take in the research? So I found that just reading the copious notes that Jessica provided us was such, I was almost surprised at how much that opened up for me, because I realized Vivian, the character Vivian, loves her brain probably more than anything.
That does come through. I like that.
You know, she really loves it. And so, and the written word means so much to her because she cares about the craft of journalism as passionately as I care about the craft of acting. And so I just thought, you know, the written word is really going to be my anchor and my guide in making these choices and knowing her motivations and knowing how she ticks. I'm playing somebody who loves the page very much.
And the page that has just been this dying breed for how many years? They keep saying print is dead.
Right.
We've seen actually announcements of some of my favorite magazines ceasing print publications in the last few weeks.
Oh, God.
And I feel, as does Vivian, my heart breaks every day when you hear these announcements.
Mm-hmm. What was so interesting to me, and this is, there is a style. There is a distinct style to this article. And it's a style that, like personally, Anna Klumsky, I don't write in. You know, when I write my own stuff, I don't write in that style. It has a really deft balance between classicism in like well-constructed, you know, thesis.
Right.
And colloquialism. There's a lot of colloquialism in it.
There is.
That was exactly what I was going for. I was like, the reason Vivian is good at this and why she wants to trust her instincts so badly, even though others really don't, she knows that she's got that sort of sweet spot between like classical literature and taste and art and pop.
Right.
She can swim between the two. And that's why she's like, no, this is a cover story. And like, honestly, like I said, I didn't know anything about it before. So I probably would have been like, really? Is this a cover story? But she knew.
But it's all in the way she chose to tell it.
Yes, yes. But she knew that people would grab it.
Yeah. And there's a Wall Street Journal version of this story. There's an Atlantic version of the story.
Right.
And she chose to tell it in her voice because she trusted her instincts that that was going to resonate with people. And that's where that sort of, trust me, guys, trust me, this is it.
Yeah, yeah. in the, you know, the very uncomfortable words, print is dead type topic, I think there's a lot of people who are just like throw up their hands, or they're like, I don't know how to talk to these young people.
Right.
I don't know what TikTok is. I don't know what these people do. And she's like, well, you can do that, or you can actually try and understand it and, you know, weave some sort of a fabric between the two, between where we came from and where we're going. You got to figure it out, you know, and I think she's got that. She's got that pop mentality. That is something that I don't. I'm very square.
Well, you're more academic leaning.
Yes. And so I was really excited to figure that out and live in that world a little bit because I don't live there often.
Well, and what you bring up is so important, which is her pop mentality is the reason her stories are so perfect for IP to adapt. Hustlers is very evocative. It's at once about class and people of color and women trying to break into a world. It's also just sort of sexy and fun and audacious.
And disguised in sex, exactly.
And disguised in sex. So yeah. I think it's like that Gay Talese, that great tradition of their narrative storyteller, but who isn't judging his or her subjects. Mm-hmm. You're just coloring the world and then putting it out there. Yeah. And I think that's what Jessica and thus Shonda has done with this show.
Yes, yes, yeah. Shonda also has...
She had a big part in this too.
She had that magic.
Okay, don't go anywhere. There's more from behind the scenes of Inventing Anna right after this.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, Stacey here again. Now back to the interview. So I have a number of scenes I'd love to discuss with you because there's so many things to unpack, as the kids say these days.
And I like that one. There's some I get tired of. I do. Like, hold space. I'm like, God, don't we have a better way? Don't we have a better way to say it? I love the idea of holding space, but I want a better way. But unpack, I totally am still on that train. I like it. Let's unpack.
I'm with you. I do not bristle at that word. I revel in using it. So let's unpack. There's something in episode 2 that really struck me, which is this idea that journalists sort of celebrate this badge of honor of being these poor worker bees, right? You know, we rail against the establishment. I don't need that fancy job. I'm doing this for $35,000 a year, and I'm doing God's work, and I'm for the people. And then when we see her go to the mansion, we see her spend time with Talia. This is Vivian, of course. We see her sort of softening and thinking, well, maybe money's not that bad, and these heated floors are actually really, really luxurious and comfortable.
Yeah.
Inhale. What is that?
Sage, this whole freaking compound must be infused with it.
And yet, I can't find sage anywhere, and I've looked.
Maybe it's not sage we're smelling, maybe it's money.
So tell me how you perceived that push-pull for Vivian of wanting to kind of stay in this kind of reverse snobbery space about wealth, and then what she ends up learning about that and about herself.
Well, and I want to be really sensitive to anything that I say that might sound in any way like a judgment, because I you're supposed to be your character's advocate, and I am.
Of course.
Vivian, because of her beat, because she did entertainment and finance, I think she did want to be a part of the club.
So you think she was kind of secretly pining for that?
Yeah. I think, you know, she found her way into this world via these beats. And so you have to ask yourself, well, why is that? Where? And we were talking about this with the pop mentality. I think she is into it. I think she does like shiny things.
That's very interesting.
Right? And I do think that she, this is backstory stuff that I built for myself, but like, you know, I do think that she was driven by the idea that, well, if I just crack the code, they'll let me in. And cracking the code is the chasing of the story. That's what we watch in her job, is the cracking of the code.
And that sounds a lot like someone named Anna Delvey.
Taylor. So yes. And I think that that's why she gets it right away. She goes, wait, how did she do it? She went the back way and I've been trying to go the front way.
Right. She's been trying to do it, follow the rules.
Exactly. And so I had, just in the playing of the Talia scene, so much fun. I had so much fun with the idea that she was starstruck. She like genuinely probably loves Talia's products and like probably loves Talia's magazine.
It was almost like Talia found her on the street and brought her home and said, let me just give you something pretty to wear.
Yes. And I love the idea that she was trying to pretend she would, like, no, this is a job. I'm pretending I'm really cool. I mean, you know, the concept is like, if you love Rachel Ray or if you love Oprah or if you, you know, like, women love them, you know, like she's like, and so I love the idea of like Vivian really trying to play down how like freaking giddy she was.
It was very fun to watch. And also just the awkwardness and discomfort with which she walked into the room after she put the caftan on.
Yeah.
It was almost like she had just put on this uniform where she's thinking, okay, this is, I'm playing this part now and I'm loving it.
Yeah, I'm loving it. And am I going to get in trouble? Like, are my bosses watching me somewhere? Am I going to get
pumped? Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there really is, and I've dealt with this myself, this idea, you know, you can't take free lunches. And if someone's giving you a gift, I mean, it's a real line that we have to follow. And but it definitely gets blurred.
That's what our show's about.
And, you know, she had to spend the night.
Yeah, and that is so what our show's about. Yep. Yep.
Another scene that I really love that is actually not as much about you as it is thematically about something important. Episode 7, when we see Vivian madly writing her story, the race against time for her water to break or not to break.
I know.
And Barry and Maude are talking about Vivian's melee and the fracas with the story.
I love that scene.
And the idea that, you know, she didn't have the opportunity to mess up and not have it impact her career.
I mean, she's crazy.
She is not crazy. She has her reasons.
So she made one mistake in her career.
Women don't get to make mistakes.
It was a big fuck up.
Anna Delvey and Terry Kinney doing that hushed tones.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you picked that out because it was so well done, so well meant. Like, they're just talking about somebody that they care about, but they're characters. They're like, yeah, let's be really real about this.
But it's funny because that character who fancies himself very woke and progressive, and he's very, he doesn't realize that the privilege that he has enjoyed, that if that did happen to him, he would never have had to think twice. He wouldn't have been put on probation. He wouldn't have had to worry, am I ever going to work again?
Yeah.
And we have Maude saying, but women don't get to make mistakes. And that really puts a fine point on so much of what's driving Vivian. And how did that inform your performance?
Oh, it was so much. I mean, it's right there in the writing. Shauna just, and our wonderful writers just gave Vivian so much depth that, like, I would be remiss to not play all of it. You know, like, it's all to be played. And yeah, that's so much of her drive, you know. And I think the other thing is, too, is like with that backstory of what happened before we meet her in our program that we uncover throughout, this is what the con does. And I love in the fifth episode, Neff's episode, we see it. It's a beautiful sequence where we really feel the pit in your stomach that happens when you find out that maybe you were duped.
Neff, what's up?
Yeah, everything's cool. I just had a question about that guest of mine, Anna, who's leasing 281.
You know, I checked about that. My dad's never heard of her. Maybe she made inquiries. A whole bunch of people toured that place, but...
Thanks, Charlie.
The reason betrayal like that is so bad is it because it makes the person who put all of their trust in somebody, it makes them doubt themselves. That's the major harm.
You start to mistrust that little voice, your instincts.
Yes, right. And that's all you've got. And so we're watching Vivian just grasping at any sense of stability when it comes to her own gut. And her own gut is like also occupied by this brand new thing too, right?
So actually, speaking of her gut and the thing that she's growing inside of her, the next thing I wanted to talk to you about is the fantastic sequence where she's giving birth and she's struggling. And her husband, who knows her best, says, tells the doctor, wait, I got this.
I love it.
And he tells her, you're failing. You're losing. And out of all the sort of mantras she can tell herself, what does she invoke? But something from Anna Delvey saying, you're not special. I'm not special. Women have babies every day.
Yep.
Walk me through how you think in that moment we finally see all of this influence coalescing in her, even though she's pushing Anna back all the time. But we see that this person has seeped into her consciousness in a way that maybe she is even surprised by.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you just said it. And that is, for me, something that I think is so special about the show we made, is really this whole Anna Delvey story. Yes, it's shiny and it's interesting and it's societally compelling and all of that. I mean, it really, really is. And when you go to the core, it's about relationships. It's about friendships, relationships. That's why this whole thing is, you know, the social media of it. That's about relationships. And we all have to understand where we're at right now with how we relate to one another. The idea that a journalist whose whole motivation to be in front of another human being is to get the most intimate parts of that person just because they asked. You can bring it full circle.
Right.
You know, that's a relationship. That is a major relationship. And you can't not be affected. You know, it's when we go on the subway and a person smiles at us, or even these days, you see it in their eyes because we're wearing masks.
Right.
That can affect your whole day. That can affect the whole way you think about New York City that day. Because somebody was kind on the subway. This is life. And so when we get to that, really, it's a climax of the baby part of the, you know, of the pregnancy. When we get to that extremely vulnerable moment in an irreplaceable moment in Vivian's life, and we see that she has been so affected, and it benefited her. It helped her do the most important thing she had to do. And it was meant as an insult in the first place.
Right.
We can only do this in art. We can only do this in TV or film and storytelling, because it's actually very difficult to put into words unless you're seeing it shown before you.
It's very true. We're taking a short break, but please stay tuned. Hi, everyone. We're back. You talk about relationships, and one of the more intriguing relationships in the series, which we don't really get to explore too much, is the one between Anna and her mom. And of course, Vivian, you know, learns so much about Anna's backstory and her trip to Europe.
And yet does she.
And yet does
that's
she.
Well, I'm always like, wait, but, because that's it. You know, she had to have the grace to say, I'm not digging anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
At the very least, she got some context.
Yes. Yes, yes.
For
yes,
Anna
yes.
And her backstory.
Yes, yes, yes.
Her mother tells Vivian, it is better to believe monsters make monsters.
Do you know, sometimes you have a child like my Ivan, and their soul is your soul. And sometimes you have a child and she's a stranger under your roof. Anna was a stranger her whole life. Cold stranger.
It's a sad scene. And you start to see in Vivian, you know, she's coming off the buzz of her story. She's thinking like, okay, I got my career back. I'm getting the office. Mm-hmm. And you really start to see a little sinking feeling in her that, not that she did something wrong to Anna, but there's so much more to this. There's so much pain that needs to be unpacked, to use our word.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's sort of time for her to step away. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you played that moment with that wonderful actress who played her mother, and how did that inform for you the bigger meaning of Anna Delvey?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I'm even thinking about it in a new way right now, because I'm like, that moment is also the moment where I don't know if she realizes this, but the person playing her, that's me, realized that this is a lot of postpartum stuff. There's this mania that she's got to go and do this.
I thought about that, the effect of having just, she's breastfeeding. I mean, she's having to do this after this traumatic physiological event. And then she gets on a plane. I mean, that cannot be easy for her.
Not easy. Right. And they even talk about it. She and Jack talk about it.
You're going where?
Germany.
Why?
Because what if she's not fake? What if she's not a fake heiress? What if she's been telling the truth this whole time? All of that money she showed up with in New York, where was that from? All of the rumors that she might be laundering money, all the suspicious answers that I got from her parents.
Okay, slow down.
This story could be bigger than Anna. It could be bigger than anyone knows. And I know the timing is bad.
And she's like, I gotta do it, I gotta do it. You know, it's a compulsion that she's following. And of course, it's also on the back of this other thing that she birthed being out there in the world and she can't have any more control over it, right? Which is like exactly what you're terrified of all the time when you have a baby or you have a kid, right? You're like, ah!
Or even in the context of your life, when you make a piece of art that you ultimately don't have control over how it's received, how it's edited, how it's packaged. So there must have been some familiarity on your part with that too.
Definitely. But like legit, that comes out so much in just being a new mother. You know, and so I do think that whole trip is a trip about new motherhood, right? Because that scene that you're describing, you know, she's leaking. She's completely exposed to this other person who's already gone through this.
You are a mother. Couple months now.
She's exposed as a human, as a person who has flaws and forgot to do these things, like, you know, change her pads and like didn't realize what time it was and all that. And so there's this idea of also her going, you know, I might not be up to this right now. Like, am I going to actually discover all the things I want to discover about these people? Am I going to bug them more, ruin their lives even more? Expose them even more.
And is it worth it at that point?
Is it worth it? And also, I'm raw as can be. I'm wearing their shirt now. Like, who's exposing whom now, right? So I think there's a bit of just having to pull back on the reins in a way and just be like, let's everybody just go back to their corners for a second. Yeah.
And also the fact that she's connecting with this person whom she doesn't know. Mm-hmm. But she's connecting with her as a mother.
Yes.
You know, that a few weeks prior, they wouldn't have had that in common. And now she is thinking and seeing the world differently.
Yes.
Because of this newfound sense of maybe rawness, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's complex.
It is very complex. And the final scene I'd love to discuss, of course, is between Vivian and Anna in prison, their last interaction.
This is it. This is the last time we're going to see each other. I'm saying I'm sorry. I'm asking you.
No, stop, Vivian. You're not my friend. We're not some giggling idiot BFF whatever. I don't like you. You have terrible shoes. This was a transaction we had to deal.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. You made good on your part of the deal. You said you would make me famous, and you did. Who's more famous right now than Anna Delvey?
I would love to know, first of all, how you and Julia, you played the scene so beautifully, what you talked about beforehand and what you were trying to accomplish together in that moment, because it's such a hard tone to strike.
In doing scenes with Julia, I think we approach a scene very similarly, you know, in that we let the text tell us where it goes and we take it from there. And letting the text lead us, but then, of course, we did kind of look at each other in the eye and go, oh, this is our last thing. This is our last thing to do. So there was a bit of, I appreciated this and I'm so happy and I'll miss you. And, you know.
And was it odd too that all of your interactions were in the prison setting?
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously, there were some courthouse scenes, but really the thrust of your entire connection with this character is the two of you sitting in front of each other.
Yes. It was strange and wonderful. It was strange, wonderful. Because it's what you sign up for in acting class, like just to sit in front of your scene partner and try to get the thing you need from them with the text. Like that's literally what you sign up for as an actor. And we got to do that. We got to do it. And it was so fun. And yeah, that scene, we kind of played around with how much they were feeling and how much they were willing to show their feelings. And, you know, there was a bit of choreography that we all, director included, like we all sort of were fine tuning with every take.
Having lived through this character and this story from the perspective of Vivian, what do you think are the lessons that you feel can be gleaned from this story? Where do you think she succeeds and where do you think she fails, if at all?
I think what we did talk about already with regards to relationship, I think the idea that we don't get to compartmentalize as much as we think, you know, and that really to pretend that we can really limit us. I think that if we can know that everybody deserves respect and everybody deserves their story told, and that that will affect the storyteller as well, and that that's a unique perspective. We get choices about how to tell a story. I think that that gives us a better sense of responsibility, hopefully. And I think that that's what Vivian sort of is discovering in real time for herself. You know, I think that that certainly she does fail in a lot of ways of just maybe not being aware of herself and aware of what's actually going on with her instead of thinking about the outside all the time. And I think that she ultimately succeeds in getting the story she wants.
Right. Of course. That was the end goal.
Right. And all of her redemption and all that. Mm-hmm. But also just on a deeper personal level, I think she probably succeeds in understanding like that a heart has a huge capacity and that it's not just reserved for who the brain says is reserved for.
Mm.
Yeah, that's surprising to her, but also got to be a success for her because I think it's going to make her better at what she does.
And it feeds in directly to something Jessica shared with us, which is the fallacy of journalists having to be objective. No one can ever be totally objective. Everyone brings a point of view to a story, but it's sort of that reserving of judgment and just being open, mm-hmm. which sounds like is where you left Vivian as her performer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, Anna, thank you so much for your time. I know you're a busy woman. We really appreciate you sharing such insightful thoughts with us. And we congratulate you on your work in the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Next time, I'll be back with actor Alexis Floyd, who plays Anna's ride-or-die, Neff. Alexis offers some powerful insights into her character and tells us what it was like to meet and befriend the real Neff.
I remember one of the first things Shonda said to me so simply was, "I love this woman." You know, in the character description, she describes her as Barack Obama meets Beyonce.
Wow, that's a tall order, Alexis.
Who are you telling me?
If you're enjoying this show, subscribe, share with your friends, rate, and leave us a review. All that good stuff. And if you haven't finished binging Shondaland's Inventing Anna on Netflix, please go do that. We don't want to spoil it for you. Inventing Anna, the official podcast, is executive produced by Sandy Bailey, Lauren Homan, Tyler Klang, and Gabrielle Collins. Our producer and editor is Nicholas Harder. And the show is produced and hosted by me, Stacey Wilson Hunt. Inventing Anna, the official podcast, is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.